We are tapping into the remarkable mind of Eldon Taylor, and we're going to talk more with him and take your calls when we come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Eldon Taylor with us. We'll get to your calls as soon as Tommy can get to them as well. Eldon, I want to talk with you for a moment about trends in what's happening. And I see, for example, the internet has really crushed a lot of retail stores. Radio Shack has been hurt by it, going into bankruptcy a second time, closing 200 stores. Staple, the office company, just announced tonight they're going to close 70 stores. Sears has closed stores. Kmart has closed stores. Macy's. Trends. And you look at trends. What's happening? Is this going to continue?
Well, I mean, the bottom line to that is yes. The impact of the internet is incredible. And, you know, we have a couple of major players. Amazon, as a case in point, has devastated the mom-and-pa bookstore business. They simply cannot compete. They cannot stock every single book that comes out. And we have seen them literally disappear. You talk about Radio Shack. Well, you remember Borders.
Oh, yeah.
I think Borders was, you know, as bulletproof as Barnes & Noble. Even Borders could not keep up. So you either change the name of your game, and by that I mean you reinvent yourself. I have seen one bookstore chain actually convert itself to where they sell as many electronics as they do anything else.
Right,
now.
And little coffee shops. They turn into coffee shops.
Yeah, that's right.
Like that.
So, you know, we see that the larger players on the internet begin to dominate the marketplace. And, you know, there's a great danger in that because we're really handing monopolies over to these larger players in the name of, I'm going to save a couple of bucks. At the same time, you know, the convenience is such that even if you dislike an Amazon because of what? The way they treat their employees, and there's a lot of people that say, you know, they're horrible to their people, or because you're just afraid that, you know, they are going to drive your local business out of business, whether it's a Radio Shack or the mom-pa bookstore, or for that matter, they compete in the grocery business now.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you decide you're not going to buy from them. Even then you find yourself buying from them because, well, you can always get what it is that you're looking for.
Well, I have found online shopping is great if you don't need something like right now. So if you can wait a few days, you get it delivered to your doorstep, it's there, and, you know, no hassle. You don't have to park in some parking lot. You don't have to fight people.
These online retailers are even wise to that. You're watching the drone delivery system become effective. In Seattle, you can actually have deliveries made to you via a drone today.
Here it comes.
You know, hey, it isn't just, it's technology. It's at a full outright race. We are going to see very soon a radical change in materials. The material industry is changing because we have gained enough understanding of the structure of the atomic and molecular scale of materials that we can begin to manipulate that. We're seeing synthetic biology come online. I had a conversation recently with the founder of PETA, and we spoke about synthetic meats that are being laboratory grown from the cells of a cow as opposed to growing cattle. Well, so far they've made a hamburger, but it was also very, very expensive. But that technology is there. They're sequencing the DNA, and as a result, you know, this old idea of clonal capacity is becoming an organ possibility, and it may well be that day after tomorrow, you know, we'll have something like a BioBricks facility that we'll go into, and they will pull some cells, and they will grow some extra organs for us, those vital organs that we fear might fail because of our genetic structure.
Right.
you know, personal genomics has really changed the whole game, though. The Human Genome Project, which was completed in 2001, has rewritten our understanding of the possibilities here, and the social economic world may completely change as a result of that. So it's not just data interfaces. It's not just the internet. It's you know, it is a complete change to how we view the world. We've got, you know, what we call nootropics, new fashion drugs that are combinations of different neurochemicals that are going to have a tremendous impact on us. And they're talking about cosmeceuticals. You'll actually be using some form of pharmacology to modify parts of your body. We have got a very interesting age in front of us, Mr. Nuri, and
yes,
it's
do,
coming
sir.
At us very, very fast. And there is, you know, there are those folks that claim in South America that they have been able to actually clone a human being.
That's okay. True. Yeah, that's what they say.
That's right. So, you know, it's not Dolly the sheep anymore. You know, it's Andy or Ethel.
And Dolly's no longer with us, but yeah. They'll just clone her again, and she'll be here again.
Yeah, it is going to be a very challenging world, and our bioethics are not keeping up with the rate of the technology growth. And so the trend is going to change not just commerce. It's going to be a major overhaul of how we see the world.
All right, let's go to the phones for you now. Tina's driving in Illinois somewhere. Whereabouts in Illinois are you, Tina?
We're by Peoria. Wow, George Nuri, I've listened to you for years.
Well, thank you. And I've been to Peoria. Love the area.
We're on our way to see our granddaughter for the first time.
How sweet. So. First time. You'll have fun on this one.
Oh, I'm going to love her anyway. First of all, my big thing was that you gave Obama a B, and, you know, there's so much going on in the world with hate. The hate is horrible.
Yes.
And he did nothing to stop that hate. In fact, I feel as if he kind of, you know, urged it on. But just now, I heard what you were talking about the bioethics. And cloning a human would be horrible. I mean, how can you clone the human soul?
You can't.
You can't do that. I mean, it would be like an automaton walking around without a soul. You know, I mean, that is a very, very scary thing.
Well, unless any kind of a human, unless the embryo gets a soul, however they come, maybe that would happen. You know, so the clone would be identical, except that the soul will be different.
But, you know, I feel that the human soul comes from God. So, you know, that's me.
Yeah. I mean, I think God would give the body the soul, but it would be different. So it's not going to be exactly the same. Eldon, what do you think?
What a sad thing, though.
I think, unfortunately, the very folks that are working on this kind of thing are what we think of as materialistic reductionists. They do not believe there is any such thing as God, let alone a soul. And the human condition, for all intent and purposes, is a product of Darwinian evolution. You can think of yourself as a meat machine through their eyes. And so the idea of extending life is just the next step in the human evolution to them. They're completely oblivious. And if not oblivious, they're just downright obstinate about the notion that there is no such thing as a God. And, you know, our secular humanistic society is, in a sense, cultivated that. So if you attend a university today, you will find that most people, except in those schools that are church-operated schools of one kind or another, are, for all intent and purposes, atheists. And if you're not an atheist, you don't admit it because you're not likely to get tenure.
That's true. At least with an agnostic, they're still looking for proof. An atheist, they're not going to believe you.
That's exactly right. But even the agnostics, and most of these people that we used to think of as atheists, like Michael Shermer is a case in point. I spoke at great length.
Michael's the skeptic. He's been on the program a lot.
Yeah, and you know, he calls himself an agnostic because they have come to understand that an atheist says there is no such thing. And that argument can be defeated by the same premises that are used to defeat an argument that you have a proof. In other words, neither can be proven from an existential or objective logical way. So what you're left with is the inability to deliver a hard proof, and so their move is to go to agnostic. As an agnostic, well, that possibility exists, but the probability is mox nix. So now you can't argue with them that their position that there is no such thing as a God is as unprovable as the position that there is a God.
Back to the calls we go. Sally's in North Dakota. Welcome to the program, Sally. Go ahead.
Hey, George. How you doing?
Good, Sal. Thank you.
Good. I've been on here a few times.
Yeah.
But you know what? I really love this show tonight. Plus, I really love the music bumpers. They're cool.
Okay, great.
Right from my era. The first thing is, George, you know, I just want to say that when Eldon Taylor had spoken and he quoted, "A nation of sheep will evolve as a nation of wolves will arise." And a nation, yeah. If we are all sheep and we follow the protest, you know, avenue, and we don't really understand what that whole thing is about, we're just sheep. Now, because I've been very close to the Doppel protest program that was going on in North Dakota for so long, I followed the news, and, you know, in the beginning, I really was behind them. And as I watched the news and read the articles concerning all of that and discovered that where they were going to lay that pipeline wasn't even on sacred land to begin with. And they had professional protesters come in.
Yep.
Now, the people
organized
from our area, the tribes that belong here,
with legitimate gripes at the time, right?
Exactly. They were doing the right thing. You know, they did have them move. The tribal community did have them move off of sacred land. And so they did divert that a little ways, which is cool. But we had all of these protesters from that were professionals come in, and they pretty much took over in a lot of ways. They were the ones that burned that bridge. We now have no access to go out to that casino on Indian territory because the bridge is out.
Is the casino still open? I guess not, huh?
Well, it is, but you have to take a whole different route just to get there, and it's quite a drive.
Are they working on the bridge?
They are, but because it's bridge work, there's so much red tape
involved,
George.
Oh, yeah, that could take a long time.
A long, long time. Yeah, they think it's going to come into the next year before that will be done. And there was just an awful lot of, we had some arrests.
Well, let's get Eldon's take on some of this. The professionals, again, Eldon, who come in and sometimes destroy real protest. Because I don't see anything wrong with protesting as long as they're not breaking the law, not looting, not breaking windows, not stopping traffic. You know, protest is good. You know, that's the American way. But don't break the law when you do it.
Yeah, you know, you have to be careful nowadays. I mean, first of all, you see special interest groups that will not just employ people, professional protesters to come in and protest, but they'll assault protests. You know, you, for example, if you want to contaminate someone's name, maybe you have them dress in KKK outfits and hold on to a sign that says they're supporting
you, that
whoever
person.
Whoever it is that
yeah.
you want to, say in this instance, Trump. You want to paint him in a bad light, and I'm trying to be generous here in how I'm saying this.
No, I understand
what
you're saying.
A handful of folks, and you dress them up as KKKers, and they hang on to signs that say "Vote Trump."
Yeah.
Now you get the media there, and of course, what you have done is
there's your subliminal message.
Label this man as a racist. Sally's absolutely right. You know, the pipeline issue became a social media event, not just hired protesters, but anyone that paid any attention to Facebook or any of these other social networks, you had all kinds of people that jumped on the bandwagon. This is sacred ground. This is Native American. We have been so cruel to these people. We have deprived them. We have, and of course, that created this whole outcry. And today, if you want to really excite a mob, there's no better place to go than social media. Here, there's some anonymity. Oh, you might have my name, but I'm not right there for you to look me eye to eye and say, come on, you don't really believe that. I can post almost anything I want. And there are all sorts of folks who just create pseudonames, accounts that, you know, belong to some alter ego, so you can't, you're not even really dealing with the right, you know, with a human being per se that you could actually find. So what you have is an incendiary way to excite the mob, the mass, to galvanize them behind some kind of cause. And as Sally so aptly pointed out, not only is that sheeple, but what we have are all these people protesting something based on false-to-fact information.
And in some cases, though, Eldon, in terms of marketing, it's brilliant.
Well, it
may be unethical, and it may not be right.
It is.
But it's brilliant for how they did it.
Brilliant, but at the same time, it's the improper use of understanding human psychology,
yes.
In my view.
It's taken advantage of it.
That's right. If, you know, it should be the goal of the government and the goal of each and every one of us to optimize our lives in ways that produce the highest benefit without doing harm to another human being. That should be what life is about.
We are going to come back in a moment with Eldon Taylor and take your final calls on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, don't forget, Saturday night when you go to bed, turn your clocks up ahead 1 hour if you change the daylight saving time. It's that time of year again, so go ahead and do it. I'm going to be on assignment tomorrow night. Richard Serrett will be sitting in. I will roll back in Monday for some more great coast-to-coast shows. Okay, welcome back to Coast, our final segment with Eldon Taylor, author of the new book called Gotcha, and we'll get to your calls. Eldon, in Chapter 27, you have something kind of chilling, which talks about if you want to subvert the system. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, subverting the system really comes down to two aspects. The first aspect is, if the system is intent on leading you in a direction, then the only way that you can subvert that is to become aware of how that system works. The other side of that story is, you know, is there a master plan? There's a document that's referred to as the Operations Research Technical Manual that talks about silent weapons for quiet wars. And in this document, there's a patent that's explained that, for all intent and purposes, shows, I shouldn't say a patent, because it's not, it's a matrix, there we go, that shows how engineering of social automation systems, what is termed as silent weapons, on a national or worldwide scale, can be applied to control a society, to develop slavery, and or to perpetrate genocide. So when you understand that social engineering is the objective of all of these psychological ploys that are being delivered on us, and when you understand how your mind works and why the subconscious is in charge and what's in that subconscious that you're unaware of, all these lifetimes of beliefs, all these sound bites that you've taken into the womb and have become the way you reason and think, all the social engineering up to now, whether it was done through entertainment or it was done through so-called news outlets, when you understand that that script is actually the script that you're living out, you begin to become aware that you're not really making your own choices. In fact, one of my favorite questions, George, is what was your last truly original thought? And when you ask that question, I always get the same response. Silence,
that's right.
And that's because most people don't do any original thinking at all. Thinking, I don't even like the term thinking. My wife is very often saying to me, well, so-and-so just isn't thinking correctly. And I, you know, get out of my face. Thinking is a word. It's a verb that describes an activity that involves cognition, not some subconscious predisposition that's spitting out some soundbite that I've gurgitated because of some media influence or some peer pressure influence. Yeah, and of course, we come right back to what you asked me at the top of this show. The reason I wrote this book was, one, so you'd be aware of all of these techniques and tools, not just the hard techniques that we've discussed, the ability to control a car or to spy on you through your smartphone, etc., but the psychological techniques that are involved, that predispose you, that manipulate you, that move you. Once you become completely aware of these, then you can begin to become mindful. And, you know, and I try to tell you how to do that as well. So, you know, the bottom line is we live in a society, Sally identified it in my view, of sheeple, people that are not thinking anymore, coast to coast listeners excluded. And by the way, I am one of your insider members,
yes,
and everybody
you are.
Out there should become an insider. I mean, you can't miss coast to coast. But not only are we, you know, living in a world full of sheeple that are just flocking to this, that, and the other based on the drum of some, you know, unseen drummer, some elite propagandist in the background, but we have lost our ability to reason because we stopped a long, long time ago. We actually have been educated and enculturated into a memory system. We go to school and we aren't taught to think. That's discouraged because it leads to questions that are disruptive. And I'm using the language school teachers use. So you go to school so you can learn the propaganda they wish for you to learn. And if you, you know, memorize it and regurgitate it properly, well, then you're going to pass, and with better grades, you're going to be able to go on to college where you'll go through that same process again. Our educational system is a copy of the 1812 Prussian system, and Hawthorne and others, you know, founders of the, not Hawthorne, his name slipped out.
That's
I'll think of it in just a second. The founders of our public education, Thorndike, there we go. The founders of our public education system stated that it exists to socialize, not to educate. With that in mind, if we realize that our education has been all about socialization, and that what goes on in the propaganda machinery, whoever is behind that, whichever factor, and sometimes the factors aren't really different, they exist to divide us, not that they're driven by different machinery, then we can begin to understand why it is that we live in a world where the only thing we're aimed to do is consume. And the more we can consume, well, the better we are, because that's where everything rests. Our status, our self-esteem, our power, it's all in our ability to consume. Now, what on earth would make, you know, the priority of life about consumption, except for those who want to keep us consuming, keep
exactly.
that economic machinery going, keep that debt in place? You know, here's another psychological pivot point for you. Someone comes to my door, George, with a gun, and they say, hey, I want you out of my house. I'm going to take over this house. It's no longer yours. I'm going to find some way to resist.
It's well, yeah, maybe not right then, but at least eventually.
Yeah, if they're without a gun, if they just tell me to get out, I'm going to tell them to go to where you know where, right?
Yep.
But if they come to my door with a piece of paper and they say to me, you know, I'm sorry, but you didn't pay your bill.
You're being kicked out.
And you are being, that's right. You'll lower your head in shame and walk away.
Yeah.
That's the kind of control mechanism that exists in the consumption cycle that includes debt.
True.
True.
Let's take some calls to wrap things up here.
Okay.
Let's go to Frank, truck driving in Florida, first-time caller. Go ahead, Frank.
Good morning, and thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You're
breaking up here. We'll try to get a better connection here, Tom, on first-time caller line. But we'll go to Jeff in Culver City, California. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, hi, George and Mr. Taylor. Earlier you guys mentioned what the CIA is doing with smart TV phones and all that mess, but many decades before this began, the legendary Gil Scott-Heron once said, you know, one of his album tracks, when you think you're watching TV, the TV is really watching you. I forgot the song, but it came out way before the internet was invented, I think in the late 70s, 80s, or whatever. But when it comes to these other quote-unquote humans manipulating and controlling other really true, authentic, genuine human beings' minds, thoughts and emotions, it made me wonder and reflect on the artificial type humans that are perhaps being unleashed on an unsuspecting and unwitting public populace from either underwater caverns in the Pacific Ocean or remote and isolated places like Antarctica, which is over 4.5 million square miles, supposedly still unexplored and developed. But my question is this, Mr. Taylor, do you believe that people like Claude Vergilion and Brigid Bosselier of the Raelian group have been actually cloning and replicating a generic form of humankind? And if so, what is the ultimate goal of these artificial clonetic humans? And I'll take your answer off the air.
You know, the Raelian group claims that they have indeed successfully cloned a human being. To the best of my knowledge, there is no objective evidence that supports that
right.
claim.
I've got my doubts.
Yeah, they take some really big dollars, and they have some really big donors. They left New York City under threat when George Bush essentially made it clear that cloning was unacceptable in the United States. What's the objective? Well, I think the objective is twofold. It isn't to build an army of clones. It's for all intent and purposes to deliver either immortality vis-a-vis the transfer of consciousness, which to the best of my knowledge is a scientific fiction possibility at this point. We have some great technology that is reading the mind now, that can restore memories, that can subtract memories. Some very innovative work in the neuroscience area today, technologically speaking, but I don't think we can transfer consciousness yet. So what that leaves us with is an organ bank. Here's an organ bank, and or potentially, if the technology is successful, it is finally developed, potentially the transfer of consciousness to a younger clone, which is a way of perpetuating life. That's the advertisement, that's the plan, that's what they say that they're working on. I don't believe there's anything nefarious beyond that.
Let's go to Rick in Olympia, Washington now. Hi, Rick. Thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hello, George. This is Rick, the quantum pharmacist.
Uh-huh.
And hello, Eldon. I used to be a pharmacist just up the street from you in Kellogg, Idaho, and in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
Oh, hi, Rick. There.
Hello there, Eldon. And I'll be in Spokane in about a week. I hope to meet you over there. Anyway.
Well, good. Give me a call. I'd love to meet you, Rick.
I will give you a call. I'll be at the Bighorn Sportsman Show. I do an exhibit there, and I do brain research at an exhibit at the Sportsman Show. Anyway, we don't have much time here. I'm calling up because of the drug ads that go on in this country. And I recently just wrote an article about Donald Trump and the cholesterol medication, Crestor, which he is taking, which has the potential of extreme brain mental impairment, cognitive problems, etc.
Yep.
And we are the only country besides New Zealand, and I'll make reference to they have the highest population of sheep in the world, and reference to that quote by Edward Murrow, a nation of sheep will beget a government of wolves.
Yep.
But the response on this big article I wrote about Trump on statin, dangerous statin drugs, because I am concerned about his health and his mental health, especially being the president of the United States.
Well, he better be taking his QQ10 supplements in order to offset that statin drug, that's for sure. Eldon, only have about a minute left, and I wanted you to just... give us your overall thoughts about things.
Well, I think right now the most important thing for everybody out there is to remember that if you're going to have any kind of free will whatsoever, you're going to have to take time to discover what's in your own unconscious, your own subconscious, and look at the things that are motivating you and what the psychological underpinnings are, so that for all intent and purposes, you can achieve a true state of free will, as opposed to be just pushed and shoved by the various forces that have spent the billions of dollars to know how to do that.
Eldon, your book, Gotcha, where can people get it?
Well, you can get it in any brick-and-mortar bookstore. You can get it online. It's on sale at Amazon right now, I noticed. Gotcha, the Subordination of Free Will. And if you get the book and read the book, I'd love to hear back from you.
Great. And you stay on hold. Tom wants to talk with you for a second, Eldon, so let us do that. And I appreciate you being on the program all the time in the years you have been on Coast to Coast. Don't forget, Richard Serrett is going to be filling in tomorrow while I'm off doing some business. And then turn your clocks ahead Saturday night before you go to bed. Spring ahead, right? Fall back. Spring ahead 1 hour as we go back to daylight saving time. So you're going to figure out on Monday, you're going to say, God, why is it so bright out so early? That is why. Simple as that. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.